You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Has feminism, with a capital F, become its own form of oppression? Jessica Yee would argue so, and so would the contributors of a new anthology, Feminism for Real, Deconstructing the Academic Industrial Complex of Feminism. Jessica Yee is the editor of that book. For 176 pages, they keep it real, arguing that many feminists who fight for rights every day are largely voiceless within mainstream and academic feminism. Jessica Yee is a self-described two-spirit, multiracial, indigenous hip-hop feminist, reproductive justice freedom fighter. She's also the founder and executive director of the Native Youth Sexual Health Network. Jessica joins us over the phone from Oneida, Wisconsin. Hello, Jessica.
Good morning.
Now, the title of your book, Feminism for Real, Deconstructing the Academic Industrial Complex of Feminism, can you explain what you mean by the academic industrial complex of feminism?
Certainly. So, first of all, I think that we wanted to make sure that the book was accessible as possible. So we really want people to focus on the first title, being Feminism for Real. That's the main title. And what we mean by that is we're talking about feminism in reality. And so I think that there's a bit of a generational gap for folks who might not be of my generation, so I'm in my mid-20s, and people my age and younger often say this, being for real. It doesn't mean this is real and this is not real, it means being in reality. And so by being in reality, we wanted to talk about how do we talk about feminism when it's not relegated or in charge of by institutions or textbooks or buildings or schools. How do we talk about it for real? How do we talk about it in everyday life? How do we talk about it in a way that's meaningful? Because certainly many theories, and I think different institutions or studies or centers claim that they do talk about it on the everyday, but in reality it doesn't happen that way. And so we wanted to be for real about it. We wanted to talk about why doesn't that happen? Who gets to decide what feminism is and why? And why does that kind of gatekeeping happen?
Was there a particular incident or situation that motivated you to put together this anthology?
It was really over the course of my entire life. I talk a lot about this in the introduction, but it was kind of a culmination of trying to be a so-called really good feminist on my part every day, so knowing or questioning that it wasn't something that I was even living up to myself of the different standards I thought existed to be a feminist. And it also existed particularly with a lot of young people that we work with. So in our work at the Native Youth Sexual Health Network, we work with young people all across the United States and Canada, and I find it ironic that these are some of the best feminists that I know, but they don't get recognized as such because they're too young or because they haven't read about it in a theory yet. And although some so-called capital F feminists, the feminists in recognizable theories and institutions would say, oh, yes, they're feminists, we know in reality they don't get recognized as such. And so I think the book is a lot more about truth-telling rather than hating or rather than being just totally against feminism. That's not what it is. In fact, the very first two lines of the introduction say, this is not a hate on of feminism, and it's not a hate on of academia. For far too long, I think we've thought that we needed to take up these sort of Western notions of polite discourse and not be honest and critical of ourselves when we ourselves are participating in these things, and we ourselves are part of the different oppressions that exist. And I think we can get a lot further in our dialogue when we can be honest and accountable that way.
Now, you say it's about truth-telling. Let's look at some of the truths that some of the women writing in the book tell. There's a couple of women, Krista Williams and Erin Consmo. Tell us about their truth.
Well, Krista and Erin are very, very near and dear to me and our work because Krista Williams is our lead youth advocate at the Native Youth Sexual Health Network, and Erin is actually our intern right now. And so they have a very famous line in the book that goes, F the waves of feminism, we're the ocean. And it's been quoted a number of times in the media with different things about the book. And I think that that's sort of the essence of what they're talking about. As Aboriginal people, Native people, First Nations people, Indigenous people, we have had a long-standing history of what we would call feminism in our communities, but it never got acknowledged or credited or looked at as such. And I think that their chapter speaks to this sort of division of, well, what's so-called real feminism and what is Indigenous feminism, and it's very romanticized, which is very typical with many different Indigenous knowledges. So many people think that it happened so long ago for us and it doesn't exist anymore, or it doesn't exist to any kind of point of relation, without understanding why it's purposely ignored and why it's not known. It's not for these abstract reasons, and I think that their chapter talks a lot about their frustrations with that, of knowing that it's purposeful and knowing that it's their job, particularly as young Indigenous feminists, to take that up and be loud about it and speak the truth about that. And I find it very empowering for myself, even when I know that I have other kind of sisters in the struggle, if you will, or people will saying that we're not going to shut up about this and we're going to be honest about this. And it's okay, I guess, for people to define Indigenous feminism or feminism for whatever they want it to be, and take a really, really big stance on that, and not something where we're going to get shut down again.
One of the contributors, Kate Klein, writes about learning how not to be an asshole academic feminist. What's that about?
Her chapter is at the end, and it's actually situated there on purpose, not because it's the least important chapter, because it's actually a really important chapter, because so many people, after reading the book, have said or are questioning, well, what can I do differently? Or what's my responsibility right now? And I think that Kate's chapter speaks really well to that. She is very truthful about where she's coming from. She's socially locating herself as a white woman, as somebody who has enormous amounts of privilege. But she's also not saying, well, that's just my little checkmark box of, well, I located myself and now I'm no longer responsible, or look how cool I am because I can admit that I have privilege. I think that her chapter goes a lot deeper into that, and she's being so honest about, for example, the times where, she talks about this at the end of her chapter, where she went on a date with somebody and she didn't know what to say to them because they didn't finish university. And it's not because she couldn't think that she couldn't relate to them, but she said, I didn't know how not to sound like an asshole, and I didn't know how to make sure that I wasn't coming off as this sort of elitist snob. And she's talking about her thought processes in the book, which I think so many people go through, but they don't want to admit that because then that makes them seem like they're the oppressor. And I think so many people are fearful of, if we're being honest in these different movements that we're creating, then, you know, the anti-side or the opposite side won't like us anymore, rather than this is an opportunity for us to truly move forward in a way that is going to be all the ways accountable and uncomfortable. And I think that it makes, the book has made a numerous amount of people uncomfortable with all this truth-telling.
Now, I know, I imagine when you put together a book like this, your hope is that everybody will read it. But if you had a specific target audience in mind when you were putting this together, who would that be?
I've thought about this a number of times, and I don't know that I would pick one. I think I'd pick two. I think I'd pick one would be certainly younger people. And so I mean people who haven't engaged with feminist dialogue or academia, so I mean people in elementary school and high school and people in general, younger people in general, I think is a really critical audience in terms of taking it up. And it's written in an accessible way that it could be taken up that way. I mean, our youngest contributor is 16 years old, and we have other 17-year-olds who are writing in the book, so they were also writing to their peers. And so that's one audience. I think the other audience would be feminist scholars, certainly, and institutions, and folks who think that they've done the work or that we're just ungrateful 20-somethings. I think that there's a particular response that has to be said to people who think that we're ungrateful or that we're just ranting. particularly because so many of the contributors of the book are Indigenous people and people of color, trans people, sex workers, so many different peoples that feminism itself has questioned whether our participation in the movement is okay or whether the way that we choose to live our lives is okay either. And I see that as what I say in the book is the policing of feminism that has happened, and it is disgusting. It is a lot more, I think, oppressive to me than the folks on the completely opposite side who are saying, well, women have equality already or whatever. I mean, this is about so much more than just women's rights, and I think that the book really pushes those boundaries. But you have to come to terms with reality if you're going to understand what's going on in the book.
Now, the book is intensely political, and it asks its readers to confront uncomfortable truths about themselves. In putting it together, did you have to go through that process yourself of confronting uncomfortable truths about yourself?
I think that for me that's a daily process, and I think that in a lot of the work that we do with the Native Youth Sexual Health Network, we really encourage ourselves and communities that we work with to go through that. So I think for me that's an ongoing struggle. It was certainly a lot more laborious in putting the book together. So the book isn't long. It's only 176 pages, as you say. But we also didn't want to make a book that by page 500 you would get to your revolution, because we didn't think that was fair. But it didn't need to be so extensively long if our goal was to make it accessible. So even though it's not long, it took about 2 years to put together. And I've heard some people say that it kind of rips your heart out and then you have to put it back together and put it inside yourself, and you have to read it several times to get the depth of it, because people are literally sharing their innermost uncomfortable truths. And the book is not something that says, well, we have it right, so you should do it this way, which I find a lot of books are in this sense. So they say, well, this is the theory we followed and we did it perfectly, so you should do it this way, rather than these are the mistakes that we made. There's a chapter that Deandra Jerk-Walls, who's from British Columbia, says, mistakes I didn't know I was making, is literally part of her title. And I think that's so critical in this discussion. If we hope to pass this on to the next generation or really involve them in a non-tokenizing way and really value and validate their experiences and not just include them, because I really hate the word inclusion. I'm not interested in being included. I'm interested in being the center of where things come from. Then we have to do this work. It has to be taken up in ways like this.
It's been great talking to you this morning, Jessica. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Jessica Yee. She's the editor of Feminism for Real, Deconstructing the Academic Industrial Complex of Feminism. The book is available for sale through the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. To order a copy, you can go to policyalternatives.ca and you can search on Feminism for Real.